This is the Frogcast.
Frogcast is Jeff Mitchell here this evening, and we welcome our very first guest in the history of our podcast. Alan Kenny from Blatant Homerism and Sooner Sports Radio is here with us tonight to kind of preview the Big 12, talk about some of the things that have gone on in the first few weeks around the conference, as well as project forward and what we might expect in these next few weeks. Alan, we want to thank you for coming on and joining us here tonight.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm honored to be the first guest.
That's right. Well, I will give you a little plug here. Blatant Homerism and Allen County is the one of the few podcasts I do not miss. And they got some good stuff on there that makes you laugh, and then they got some really detailed stuff on there that you don't want to miss as well if you're a football nerd like I am. So one of the things I love about Allen is he loves the Big 12. So, Allen, non-conference has been a struggle for the Big 12. Not only when we get into some of these big games, we don't always do so well. And then some teams, I'm not going to point fingers, just kind of go out of their way to not schedule any teams of any substance in non-conference. You know, non-conference game play is coming to an end here in the Big 12. What have you seen around non-conference that has shown you anything about what we might expect about some of these teams in the Big 12?
Well, I mean, I'd say that the early returns are pretty solid. You know, you've got Oklahoma winning in Knoxville. You've got Texas Tech beating an Arkansas team that was really highly regarded to start the year. You know, TCU went on the road in the big and won in a Big Ten venue, got a win. You know, of course, you know, there have been the stumbles. There's, you know, Texas obviously has had, you know, the two losses. And Kansas is just a disaster at the moment. Same with Iowa State. But, you know, for the teams that did opt to, you know, go out there and challenge themselves, you know, I'd say that they performed pretty well.
You know, some of these perception battles that the Big 12 battles without a championship game and all of that drama, do you think we've done anything as a conference to put a dent into that so far in our non-conference play this year?
That's a good question, and it's really hard. It's really hard to say. You know, I think that part of that might have to do with how well some of these teams that the Big 12 beat end up doing when they get into conference play. If Tennessee, for example, goes out and wins the SEC East, that's a huge feather in the cap for the conference. But if Tennessee kind of, you know, fumbles around in the 7-5, even 8-4 territory that they've been kind of hovering around in the last few years, then, you know, it could get just chalked up as, oh, well, you know, I mean, Tennessee's just not ready yet. You know, Arkansas, kind of a similar deal. I mean, you know, now that Arkansas gets into SEC West play, I mean, you know, Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M, all the other heavy hitters now are waiting for the Hogs. So who knows where they end up. So, you know, it's just the way college football is. You know, you're kind of measured by that company that you keep, and then you're measured by the company that they keep. So, you know, it's just kind of the stacking of resumes on top of each other, you know.
Yeah, last season I had never watched so much Big Ten West football as I was pulling on Minnesota to in the hope that they would get to the Big Ten title game. So I have a feeling I'll be watching a lot of Purdue and Illinois against Wisconsin.
Oh, man.
I'll have to suffer through that with some beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is. I live in Big Ten country, as most of our listeners know, and you know the divisions here. I do want to nickname slow and slower. It is painful football to watch.
Yeah, it is rough, man.
Yeah, my son is an Illini fan. man. He's a sophomore in high school. We're going to rid him of that. But
hopefully for your sake, you're not going to be going there to visit him for some of those Illinois games.
Oh, gosh. My luck. You pay parents weekend when we have Illinois and Purdue.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the way that things have shaken out in the non-conference, I have to agree. You know, we just have to hope as a conference that Tennessee and Minnesota and some of these other teams, you know, hopefully Arkansas can pull things together here as they get into that brutal schedule in the SEC West. But when you think about who you projected to finish, you know, maybe not in rank order, but the top three or four in the Big 12, is there anything you've seen in non-conference play or what we've seen up to this point that has caused you to shift your rankings a little bit?
Not a ton, honestly. You know, I actually had I was a little bit more bearish on than most on TCU to start the year.
Yeah,
and I feel like with the attrition that you're seeing on the defensive side of the ball there, that's kind of holding up. You know, I was a little bit, probably a little bit more optimistic about Oklahoma than most. And, you know, I had projected them before the season to lose two games, one of which being that Tennessee game. So getting through that is, you know, is a positive sign, I think. Baylor, you know, I mean, the Bears haven't really been tested. Now, they've been a little bit more sluggish than I expected. Defensively, you know, they've been having some struggles. And again, you know, there's so much noise around that program right now. You wonder if maybe some distractions end up getting to them. But, I mean, to me, they still look like the team to beat. You know, as you look through the rest of the league, you know, Texas Tech is a team that I was pretty somewhat bullish on just because I really like Mahomes and their collection of skill talent there. And I feel like they are probably even a touch or two better than I expected. But no, I mean, looking around the rest of it, I kind of figured Texas would need at least another year to get on their feet. Same, you know, Oklahoma State, I wasn't really a buyer on. Kansas State, not so much. So, you know, the story, if there's one team that's even better maybe than I expected, that's West Virginia, just based on what I've seen so far. Now, they're playing Georgia Southern without Kevin Ellison and you know, the FCS. I'm not sure if Liberty's FCS or what. But
yeah, they are
anyway,
FCS.
Yeah. I wasn't – I mean, that's
Turner
not,
Gill is their coach.
That's right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. I think you're going to see this weekend, though. I kind of think the Mountaineers are going to beat the absolute brakes off Maryland and then come into Oklahoma riding high. So that should be an interesting game. But, you know, I mean, then looking at the bottom of the conference, Kansas and Iowa State are both awful, was what I expected. So, yeah.
Yeah, they are awful. I feel bad for Paul Rhodes. I actually really like him. And this is going to be his last year in Ames, unfortunately. So, yeah. You know, West Virginia is the sleeper team that I picked to make some noise in the conference outside of TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma. And I'm like you. I do not have high hopes for the Pokes, actually. I don't think Oklahoma State is going to end up being all that strong. But when you look from what we've seen so far, and I agree with you about what West Virginia is going to do to Maryland, is there anybody, maybe even besides West Virginia, that you think might be bouncing around 9 or 10 wins come late November with a chance to kind of, you know, move towards a opportunity to win a, you know, kind of sneak in to get a piece of the Big 12 title?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, West Virginia is the first one that pops to mind. I also see potentially, I guess, maybe, I mean, you know, Oklahoma State, again, I'm not that high on them, but I do have a lot of respect for Gundy as a head coach. And you know, Glenn Spencer's done a pretty good job there, and they've got pieces. Rudolph is pretty solid at quarterback. I mean, they could make that run, and they've got, you know, most of the heavy hitters in Stillwater. So, you know, scoring an upset or two, you know, you factor that in, maybe they do kind of get over the hump into the 10 win range there.
Yeah, November is basically a round robin with Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and TCU. And the Oklahoma State has all three of them at home, if I remember.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Yeah, so that they're in the best position of those four teams to probably keep somebody out of the playoff. They'll be in a great position to be able to do that. So, yeah, what do you make of Kansas State so far? You know, they went into double or triple overtime with Louisiana Tech. You know, I know it's a cliche to not underestimate Bill Schneider, but is this the year that they actually go 6-6?
I feel like it is. That's kind of about where I had them projected earlier. They'll get somebody, you know, with an upset. You know, they've got I believe they have TCU and Baylor both on Thursday night games at home. If I'm not mistaken,
they have them both in Manhattan. I know the game with TCU is on a Saturday.
Oh, okay. You know, that's right. It's Baylor that's on a Thursday night. You know, those are the kinds of games where you know they're very, very tough. So it could be something like that, but. You know, they have such just kind of such a lackluster situation at quarterback. You know, they don't have a guy like Waters back there right now. And I think that as good as their defense has really showed up early on, at least. So I still don't see them, though, really getting beyond the 6-6, 7-5 mark there.
Well, this will tell you a little about the state of the conference as well as the anchor team of the conference. We've gotten this far and not mentioned anything about Texas other than that they went 1-2 in conference play. Yeah. You know, I sat down and I just penciled out the schedule that they have from here until the week after the Red River Shootout when they play Kansas State after the game in the Cotton Bowl. Do you think they're going to win any of these games with Oklahoma State, TCU, OU, and then Kansas State? Are they literally staring... 1-6 in the face?
Are they? Yeah. I mean, I think that I'm a little bit less inclined to jump on the Jarrod Herd bandwagon right now. You kind of see this with Texas. It feels like, especially with some of the Austin media down there, that there's kind of they're kind of willing to jump on board when stuff like this happens. Herd played, very, very well against California, and he clearly has a lot of, he displayed a lot of leadership, I felt like, and attitude out there, the kind of stuff that you can build on. But, Cal's defense is horrific.
Yeah, they are.
And so I have a hard time getting on board. Now, insert your Big 12 defenses joke here, but you're going to see far, far better units at Oklahoma State, TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma, Kansas State. I mean, than what Texas got last Saturday night. So, I have a feeling that whole project could come back to earth rather quickly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Texas fans were just so excited to see a competent quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, they were
It was so much more exciting than anything they saw in the second half of last season or that Notre Dame game performance, which was just horrific.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awful. Living here in Notre Dame territory, they said it was good to beat Texas, but it didn't feel like we beat a very good team, and I really couldn't argue with them.
Yeah, I'm with you, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I had posted on Twitter this week that I am desperate for Texas to be good again because it means so much more to beat a 10-win Texas team than it does to beat a 10-win Baylor team. And I am hopeful for Charlie Strong to be able to turn that around. But that soap opera down there in Austin, just to chase the rabbit, what did you think about the firing of the AD?
Oh, it's amazing. He was, 180 degrees from DeLoss Dodds, who had a very kind of folksy, they did a lot to kind of keep those well-heeled boosters happy. You have this complete 180 degree shift, which is what normally happens, when these kinds of changes are made. And then all of a sudden he's out, I'm not surprised at all. At some point, if you're a guy, in a position of power there, like their president Effendis, I believe is how you pronounce his last name.
I believe so, yes.
You can only listen to those calls for so long before, you just save yourself the headache and find somebody new. It does raise a lot of interesting questions about the direction of the program and where they're going to go next. I think it actually buys Charlie Strong some time. I mean, I don't think that there's a massive push to move him out of there, and I think that he has a lot of kind of goodwill, built up. But like, for if you are Strong in Strong's shoes, it does kind of make you wonder for him, like, at what point does he actually consider potentially pulling the ripcord and just, you know, getting out of what seems like, an uphill battle all the time?
Yeah, I've wondered that myself. I think it was Dan Walken from the USA Today had suggested if Charlie Strong goes 6-6 in Austin this year and Al Golden gets fired, he should just take the Miami job. And that he would be at home and, you know, down there in South Florida, and yeah, he could turn Miami into a machine again. And I'd have a hard time arguing with that.
Absolutely. And I mean, he could go down there and play the offensive style he wants to play and not have to kind of, a lot about the way he's managed that part of the team really feels like a square peg in a round hole.
It really does. I respect Charlie Strong. You know, I think he's a quality human being, and I think he's a really good football coach. Mm-hmm. But you can be all those things and still not match a culture, and I'm curious if that's what's going to end up happening there in Austin. You know, yeah, you got the boosters, you got the Texas high school football coaches, you got the pseudo boosters, you got, you know, I don't even know who the real president is there. They have multiple figureheads as the leader of the university, yeah, and the university system and all that stuff, and he probably just wants to go coach football and raise men. So
yeah.
We'll see what comes of that. Well, one of the things that has amused me as a TCU fan, just being a member of the conference here for a little over 3 years, is I didn't realize what a soap opera the Big 12 Conference was. I did not. I mean, I was envious all those years in the back of my head. We'd have 9-10 wins in the Mountain West in Conference USA, and I thought, well, at least we can go 8-4 if we were in the Big 12. Really lusted after the Big 12. And we get in here, and it's like every summer there's a time bomb that goes off about realignment and possible realignment. And I thought we'd gotten past all that. And then Boren just shot off after one of the regents meetings this summer that I'm sure you covered and knew a lot better than I did. Without chasing the rabbit in the useless conversation of expansion, what is your summary of the state of the Big 12, as well as what is there a life of the Big 12 after 2025? And I know that's a big open-ended question, but I'm really curious about your thoughts on all the moving pieces in that.
Well, it feels like, you know, that's going to be the end of it, 2025. And I just said because, you know, there's to a degree, I think there's just a lot of fatigue with this constant. Everything becomes kind of a missile crisis type situation every time something comes up, because, you know, you've got, you know, two real kind of blue bloods running everything, and all it takes is just one of them to get kind of crossways with the other, and then all of a sudden, you know, I mean they go to the mattresses on everything. There's no real compromise. It's just really a matter, everything becomes a leverage play. I think that, you know, that's what you saw this summer with David Boren, because like we just talked about, Texas is really a mess, and you know, now I think that Boren is kind of trying to assert himself kind of the kingmaker, or the lead voice in the conference. There's really no one at Texas kind of stepping up to challenge that. So, you know, keep in mind when Boren said all that too, he's got, you know, his own local politics to deal with, boosters who are, somewhat jaded about the quality of the schedule that has been kind of diluted. Long-time rivals like Nebraska are gone, so, you know, that kind of hurts the quality of the games that they're selling. And looking around at stuff and seeing, you know, well, we could be in the SEC, you know, where they have, you know, ESPN's backing and, the 24-hour network and beamed into everybody's homes. Or, you know, I think that all that, you know, there's a lot of pressure on them. And so in the long run, I just have a hard time seeing the conference stay together, I'm not – there are good options out there for Oklahoma, I think, but, I don't know. I mean, I've been around the Big 12 for a long time now, and so I kind of have somewhat of a sentimental attachment to it, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I think of there are 3.5 major rivalries that have been destroyed by realignment that involved the Big 12 directly. When you think about, you know, the Texas-Texas A&M game, the OU-Nebraska game, the Kansas-Missouri game, and it's not a big deal in the Midwest, but Pitt in West Virginia is a big deal where they are at, and they're no longer being able to play every year. I know they have some stuff down the road to play, but, you know, it's just like, you know, every 2 years it has just felt like it's come to the brink, it's come to the edge. Well, we'll just make these concessions. But if you were Bowlesby for a day and you just had unlimited power, what would you do to make the Big 12 feel, just even give some sense of security and project some sense of strength, not only to other conferences, but to recruits and to your own fans? Like you said, I can imagine that there are plenty of Oklahoma boosters that aren't happy with the state of the conference. What would you do to kind of boost the image of what I think is a really good football league?
Gosh, that's a great question. You know, I tend to prefer to be more laissez-faire when it comes to how teams schedule, but I do think that lining up all those cupcakes, all of the you know, Central Arkansas and UTSAs and everything, you know, the schools that aren't facing, you know, one other Power Five school, I do think that does, you know, dilute the Big 12 brand, you know, and Bowlesby also needs to at some point, you know. I don't know. At some point, you can't really say, you know, you can't really tell David Bourne or, you know, formerly DeLoss Dodds, like, just shut up and let me, you know, be our one voice here. But, you know, that's, if he could do something to make it feel like everybody in the league was kind of pulling in the same direction, I think it would do a lot to, you know, not only quell, you know, the public, you know, view of this unrest, but also, like, you know, force people to kind of try to, at least in some way, get on board together, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that about Bowlesby needing to tell everybody to be quiet, because, you know, when Mike Slive spoke, you knew that there was, you know, he had sorted out what was going to be said, but he was saying what the law was for the SEC. And when Jim Delaney speaks, the Big Ten commissioner, that is what's going. Whenever Bowlesby speaks, I feel like he's going to change his mind the next time he spoke, because he got a text message from DeLoss Dodd, who even in retirement is running the league. And so, yeah, I don't feel like we have any sense of strong leadership. I think it's just management by really weak consensus of one of two teams. And, you know, I'm an honest enough fan to say, you know, we're in the conference not because, you know, we have 75,000 alumni within 15 minutes of our campus. And, you know, what the big schools need, I want to obviously defer to that to make things work. But
here's the thing. Like, I look at it, and the Big 12, the quality of football in the Big 12 is really, really good.
It is really good. And we have some of the best collection of coaches in the country.
And the thing about it is you can say, well, okay, well, coaches are, you know, they have a shelf life. That's a finite resource. You know, one of them leaves, you know, the other, you know, the program goes in the tank. Well, yes, but, I mean, there's a commitment throughout the league. I mean, football is in the culture of these schools, you know, more so than in the ACC or the Pac-12, you know,
The Big Ten. I guarantee,
really. And I mean, you know, part of the reason why there are these, you know, great coaches in the Big 12 is because the Big 12 schools are committed to playing good football. You know, they're committed to, you know, giving a guy like Gary Patterson all the reason to stay at what was for a long time a mid-major job.
Absolutely.
They're committed to building facilities in a place like Stillwater. And you know, everybody's so, you know, puts on airs about wanting to be in a bigger league or what have you. And the thing is if they just would stop and look around, I mean, they've got a great deal. And I'm a big proponent. I really enjoy the round robin and not having the championship game, because I feel like it's the makes for an exciting season. It's the best way, in my opinion, to do things. It's the kind of thing where I look around and feel like the Big 12 does so much right, but because they're doing it differently, they, you know, everybody has a hard time kind of handling that.
Yeah, I agree. We have such a commitment to football in this league and this culture, all of these schools. And, you know, even if Gundy left or if Patterson left, you know, those programs aren't going to fold. They're going to spend whatever money is needed to get whoever is the best available coach that's willing to come to those programs. So, you know, those are the two best coaches those schools have ever had. But at the same time, they're going to go out and try to find the next person to replace them. So, yeah, I wish there was just a little more gosh, man, I don't want to sound like their counselor, but it's like low self-esteem that gets reinforced by every decision.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things you said several months ago on the Blatant Homerism podcast was how sick you are of the day that conferences announce how much money they pay out through their media programs. Yeah. And it, as if Purdue has a bigger commitment to Oklahoma because the Big Ten check is going to be a little bit bigger. I mean, that is just one of the most, you know, useless stats I have ever seen. And, yeah. You know, if you're getting funded in football off of your ESPN check only, you're not going to win.
Serious trouble. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Alabama spends so much money on football and takes in so much money on football. And give them a Pac-12 share, they're not going to have any problem still, you know, spending a ton of money and still putting out a quality program. This whole it's such bizarre ego stroking and you know, this whole, oh well, we're making, you know, $3 million a year more on our TV contract than everybody else. That is such a drop in the bucket compared to what these programs all spend on their sports.
Yeah, it really is. Well, in closing here, Alan, I've really appreciated you being here with us. Do you want to make any bold predictions about the way that the top four are going to finish in the Big 12 come the end of the beginning of December? And do you project anybody from the Big 12 into the college football playoff?
Yeah, I'm still going to stick with Baylor making it in there. I feel like, especially watching Oklahoma against Tulsa over the weekend, Oklahoma still Baylor's offensive scheme is still so potent, and so many teams have such a hard time. I mean, I've never really seen anybody, honestly, really shut it down. I still feel like they're going to end up being the team that makes it through the Big 12. And, I think we're starting to see it right now where there could be a lot of chaos in the other conferences. And I do feel like if Baylor can make it through with just one loss, I think that they will actually still have a pretty good shot at getting into the playoffs. So I'm going to stick with that pick. Let's see here. In terms of other, I don't really have any. Like I said, I feel like the season's so far really kind of conforming to what I expected. Watch out. Keep an eye on West Virginia, I guess, would be the one piece of word of wisdom I'd leave behind.
You mentioned Tulsa and Oklahoma and Baylor, and trickling in through the day have been some little odd details about an incident that happened there. Did you have you followed the Tulsa story where the coach from Baylor is on the sideline at the Tulsa game and Art Briles' daughter is there videotaping the game? Do I have that correct?
I think that the stuff about the video and everything to me seems, kind of, X-Files-ish. But, the thing about it is no one's stopping to, still frame, what you're doing with, your smartphone or what have you, what you're messing around with in your purse if you're not on the sideline of the game.
Yes.
Which is explicitly against, NCAA rules. I mean, this is compliance 101 stuff. And, with Baylor, you can say, oh, well, all this stuff is crazy. But, at some point, so much smoke turns into fire, if I'm OU's coaches, and frankly, I feel like if any coaching staff in the country was looking at that, they'd all flip out. I mean, everybody wants a chance to go stand on these opposing sidelines.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's the kind of thing where it's just very, very bizarre, the whole thing.
Well, my favorite comment I saw today was from Art Briles, who said he didn't know anything about it. So
yeah.
Well, we were all surprised to hear him say that.
Oh, man, nobody tells him anything.
No, nobody tells him anything. Actually, I heard Chris Peterson did tell him that his brother-in-law was on the sidelines. He did.
Gosh. Oh, man.
I did hear that. So, well, Alan, tell us where we can find your material online. Tell us how we can keep in touch with you and follow you throughout the season.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, my website's blatanthomerism.com. You can also find me on Twitter at blatanthomerism. I do a podcast for Sooner Sports Radio, the Blatant Homerism podcast, and occasionally write some stuff for Athlon Sports and the student section. So, I'll pop around there. The best way probably to get in touch with me or interact with me, though, is via Twitter. I'm always happy to talk football, and especially UTCU fans, man. Not to belabor a point, but going back to realignment real quickly, I've tried to explain to other people why I was on board with bringing TCU and West Virginia, and even though people talk about duplicating markets or anything, but I mean, these are schools that love football, that love sports, and I'm really happy that games like TCU show up on OU's schedule now every year because you're going to get good football, and I'm always happy to talk with the school, with the fans of any of the Big 12 programs.
Yeah, I hope we could hold the Big 12 together in some way because I have really enjoyed these games. Even 2013 when we were terrible, that was still a good game in Norman.
Yeah,
and that was a lot of fun. So we don't do anything in basketball. Hopefully that'll change, but we're doing our part. We're doing our part in baseball. Two straight years for the College World Series helped carrying the banner for the conference.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Alan, thank you so much for your time. Folks out there listening to the Frogcast, we'll be back up on Monday morning, hopefully recapping the TCU Texas Tech game where the Frogs come back from Lubbock with a win. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.